Okay, just before we get started, how many of you guys are devs in the room or would class yourselves as developers writing code? I think there's more of me, mate. And how many people are IT pros?
Yeah!
Yeah.
This could get ugly quick.
Guys, we're outnumbered.
So run away. So for those of you that don't know what you're sitting in here, we really wanted to focus today on real-world scenarios that myself and Mark have seen out there in the industry, either Australia-bound and also kind of America-bound where I am at the moment. But we wanted to have some fun with it in terms of just kind of playing the devil's advocate of IT pro versus developer in this session as well. So there'll be a bit of everything for the devs, there'll be a bit of everything for IT pros. I'm sure there'll be a lot of nodding as you hear some of the war stories that you guys can relate to. If you could please wait to ask questions at the end of the session, because we find with this session that there's me a fair few points where you might put your hand up and ask a question that we answer in the next slide. So please hold on to those questions to the end. And with that, we'll get started. There are some spare seats at the front here. I promise you it'll be worth the hour. Don't stand at the back.
There's six down here, one there, a few over there.
And there's a few here. So if you guys can move close to the walls, that'd be awesome. You're going to get tired standing up for another hour and a quarter. So with that, I'm going to hand over to Mark for him to introduce me.
We figured it'd be a nice way to do this, right? So I would like to introduce Mr. Jeremy Thake. Jeremy is a Microsoft MVP in SharePoint Server. How many years have you been an MVP now, Jeremy?
3 years.
3 years. He obviously works for AvPoint, as you can see.
You might not have noticed the logos all around the entire conference center, but yeah, that's AvPoint.
And at AvPoint, Jeremy is Chief Architect?
Chief Architect. I ate the last one.
Nice. And as you can see, Jeremy's actually up on stage. This is TechEd in the States, a big, fairly big event, right? And that is IT pros. Hands up. Yeah, there we go. Does anyone know who that guy is?
Fuck my giant.
Yeah, Mark Rusinovich. Has anyone used the SysInternals tools? That's the guy who wrote those, right? So Jeremy's up on stage during the keynote, right, with this guy. And now look at this. We're in a breakout session, and he's on stage with me. mate, doing well. And Jeremy is also the a founder and author of nothingbutsharepoint.com, which I believe is the largest community SharePoint site that's out there at the moment. Highly recommend that if you want to find anything about SharePoint, go to nothingbutsharepoint.com. I'm not an author, by the way.
Thanks, mate. So, now to Mark. So, Mark likes silent walks in the park with himself. He actually is also an MVP, and this is not going to animate out at all well. And the picture of him looking like he's just about to eat the microphone was at the MVP Summit this year. He basically goes, I'm going to do the karaoke at the event, which was at the stadium in Seattle, the Seahawks Stadium, I believe it was. And he's like, yeah, I'm up for this karaoke. And it was like 2 hours out, and I was like, oh, he's going to bottle before then. So we got some beers in him, and he was dead set. Anyway, we had this huge crowd of SharePoint MVPs there, and it went nuts. And everyone was like in shock. Well, this guy can actually sing. And by the end of the thing, basically everyone had swarmed around this thing and was screaming, SharePoint, SharePoint. So he was a little bit of a hero. So that was his story.
What he hasn't mentioned there, and it gets even more awesome, is that I actually broke my finger that night, and I had the choice of going to the medical station or the bar. And so I went to the bar, got a gin and tonic and an extra cup of ice, and I still managed to get up on stage. It was this finger here, my ring finger, and do that.
So obviously he works for, true dedication. He works for a company called OBS, which is one of AvPoint's actual partners in the SharePoint ecosystem, a very highly recommended SI in that space, which did win this year again.
First time.
The best places to work 2012. So there are a cool place to work. I know lots of people there. Actually, there's a few here this week. And he put the System Center Virtual Machine Manager down there because we're not going to talk about that. Well, we are going to talk about it a little bit maybe. Mm. But that's his like expertise area. But the reason being was, I said, what can I say about you? And he kind of run out. So the reason there's that big blank space in the middle is because pretty much all Mark does is SharePoint. So there you go. There's Mark Rhodes. If you want to speak to him on Twitter or follow him on Twitter, he is Mr. Hodes, not M. Rhodes. It's Mr. Hodes because he really hates that.
Yeah. Just quickly, guys, there's a seat here, there's a seat here, there's a seat here, there's a seat here. Anyone else got a seat next to them? Stick your hand up. Guys, sit down. It's a long hour. Might as well.
So obviously, as you can tell, we are good mates. We do enjoy beer together. This was us in... can't remember where.
2 years ago.
We had too many beers. But yeah, we are good mates. And today we're going to talk about IT pro versus developer. we're going to set the scene by just kind of talking about the problem that exists between developers and IT pros with regards to SharePoint. And then essentially what we're going to do is I'm going to talk a little about application lifecycle management, both from a dev and an IT pro perspective. Mark's going to talk about configuration management. And one thing we found talking to different people in the community is that there's a big set of tools out there that people may not be aware of. So we're going to cover some of those secret little tools that help me as a developer and help Mark as an IT pro, and hopefully you better take those things away. Some of them you may be aware of. Some I'm actually shocked that the guys aren't aware of. And we have tested a few of these tools, so it isn't just like 10 for the sake of it. We know that there's a lot of people that aren't aware of these things, and we figure a techie crowd that might not be familiar with them, this will be useful. If we get time, there is a hidden Easter egg section. So depending on how close we get through this, there is a bit of fun at the end too. So with that, we'll jump into the problem. So with the problem, essentially, typically what happens in a SharePoint environment with developers and IT pros is this concept of the blame game. And in SharePoint, because it is a complicated architecture where there are SQL databases, there is this concept of IIS web applications that sit on a Windows Server box. So immediately you've got the SQL DBAs, you've got the Wintel team, if it's that big a company, that just purely look after the operating system. You may even have the virtual machine guys that look after the virtual machines the operating system is running on. And then you've got these SharePoint guys on top, which have various different hats, whether it's an IT pro or a developer on top. So there's a lot of different people that get involved in this. And I guess an example scenario what we had was the blame game. The concept was an intranet had gone live. Me, the Mr. Developer, went, it worked on my machine. It's really zippy on my machine. Yes, that's because you're the only one viewing the intranet homepage that you've built on your dev box. And then it goes live into test, and they QA it with 5 users, and it still looks really fast. And then they go live on a Monday morning, and all the 40,000 users hit the homepage because it's made mandatory by their internet browser, and it brings down the SharePoint box, and the page takes 2-3 minutes to load. How many people have had a similar situation to that where they've been hit by that? Come on, be with me. There you go. Be honest. We've all been there. So what happens? Oh, it's the developer's fault. It's all the customizations on SharePoint. That's why it's so slow. I read TechNet. That's why they said it is. So the developers have to then prove that the customizations they've done haven't affected that process. So there's some various tools we'll talk about today that can help to prove that it isn't the developer's fault. The problem is that traditionally, the SQL guys, the Wintel guys, sometimes even the SharePoint IT pros, won't even start poking around in the bits they're responsible for, in the layers they're responsible for, until the devs have outright proved it's not them. What happened in that scenario, this 40,000 user environment, was it actually turned out to be a setting in SQL that hadn't been set when they did the install of SharePoint, which caused the problem and caused that site to be that slow. In hindsight, what should have happened is they should have removed all the customizations from the SharePoint site and just tested the base web application on the farm to prove that even the base web application was slow. But this was back in the 2007 early days where the dev really wanted to kind of make sure it wasn't him first. So the blame game does exist a lot within SharePoint environments because the amount of different roles there are. Now, in a small organization, you might play the SQL DBA, you might play the Wintel guy, you might play the SharePoint IT pro, and you might play the SharePoint dev. How many people are there in that situation where they're playing more than one hat? Okay. So today, for those people, this is doubly relevant. Okay.
Pull up a seat, someone.
So really, the problem is essentially about this concept, as well as the roles, is that the separation between the layers is very, very hard. For those that are attending normal .NET development sessions where they talk about the database layer, they talk about the business logic layer, and then they talk about the presentation layer, and that we can, you know, swap these in and out very, very easily, SharePoint mushes all that together. If you think of a SharePoint site, it has the master pages, the style sheets, it has all of the schema, the list items, the site columns, it has all of the documents and the list item content in there as one big blob of site. You can't easily separate those things and go, I'm going to do what I've got in my dev environment, and I'm going to push just the presentation layer over. And we'll talk about that in a little more detail later. But the concept of that mushed together makes it very, very hard to do the promotion from dev to test to prod, which is really where developers and IT pros butt heads significantly. So IT pros naturally hate customizations, and developers naturally hate the deployment process. Because they built this really sexy little app on their development machine, and they're like, oh, great, now we've got to get it over to the IT pros to release into test and prod. So today, hopefully, we're going to start to kind of unveil that and push that through. So, as a mighty developer, I write code. I check in my code. I write unit tests. I write web tests. I write code analysis on my code. I write lots of frameworks, I read lots of blogs, and I use JavaScript, and I use all the latest jQuery libraries. That's me as a developer. I'm cool. I do all the hard work. I build the solutions. Okay, that's me. That's what I do.
I guess you could say you're Superman.
I am Superman.
I disagree. Yeah, that's more like it.
Yeah. Maybe in a few years.
Yeah. This is kind of how I, as an IT pro, see a developer, right? Kind of stagnant guy, outdated, sitting in his basement, running an old computer. Doesn't get out very much.
Smokes.
Smokes, yeah. you do have nicer glasses in your defense.
Yeah.
And pants.
These are Clark Kent glasses.
Yeah? Yeah. Right, Clark Kent glasses. So, this is how I see the developer. It's not especially flattering. But I guess I should talk about myself as an IT pro. I'm the ninja of the data center. I come in, you're not getting on the network unless I let you get on that network, right? You want on SharePoint? That's not going to happen. You want to deploy something? No. Need a new AD account? I won't stand for it.
This is what I think of IT pros.
It's still Batman, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure at some point he was cool. In an actual fact, I was in IndyCar race in Baltimore last week. Before flying out here, and they had the original Batmobile that Adam West used to drive in the TV show. That was cool. His outfit, not quite as cool as that outfit. So what I see from an IT pro perspective is that these guys just slow me down. They make my job hard. I can deploy a project really easily. Why do I have to explain to him in long release management notes how he's got to use SharePoint Designer and cut and paste stuff from here and there and write this PowerShell script which he's going to pick all these holes in because, oh, that was really bad. And I'm an IT pro, and I can write code too. Okay, PowerShell is bad. So that's what I think of IT pros.
He doesn't know it's .NET anyway.
Yeah, it is .NET. Okay, so that's really kind of that introduction of that mentality that a lot of people tend to have. So what we're going to do now is talk about a few scenarios about where that's going to happen. So, Mark, do you want to jump in with this one?
Sure. when I first...
I changed it up at the last minute.
Yeah, there's not much I can add to that, is there? That's fantastic. So I want to tell you a bit of an anecdote here, and it's a story that happened in my workplace, actually. And that's that I oversee the big private cloud that we've got of all our development environments, and a developer deployed his dev environment, and he told me he was having problems. And he got around this problem because he had access to the host for some reason by increasing his RAM to 64 gig and then converting that RAM into a RAM drive. Which he then used to run all his Visual Studio compilations in. And I said to him, are you kidding me? Why are you doing this? He goes, because it takes 5 minutes to compile. And I said, so why is this my problem? He goes, because it takes 5 minutes to compile. I said, there's no CPU activity. Your memory's not doing anything. There's no disk activity, even on the RAM drive. Why don't you let me have a look at it? And I did. I spent 2.5 days scratching my head looking at this virtual machine which was taking 5 minutes to compile every project. Eventually, what it turned out was he put a timeout into his compilation script. So there's a batch inside Visual Studio that kicks off another process. I think it was WSP Builder. And he'd forgotten to put a specific flag on the end. As a result, it was hitting that and just timing out. And it did something like 10 timeouts of 20 seconds each. Right, which was enough to throw off the compilation process by a significant factor. Anyway, once we fixed this up, so the IT pro got into Visual Studio, which I don't even have installed on my desktop, and I fixed up his compilation scripts, tweaked a couple of things on the virtual machines, and by the end of it was running in 31 seconds, and he was back down to 4 gig of RAM, no need for a RAM drive. But my point there is it's very easy, right, to look at a result of something and say, that's not my fault. Right, so the IT pro looks at it and goes, it's got to be Visual Studio. It's got to be your code, right? The developer looks at it and goes, it's got to be that virtual server, right? Only when you actually start looking in both locations and, with an open mind, right, do you actually see that those results are very, very open to interpretation.
You've got another good story to tell now as well.
I've got another good story. Oh, this is a good one. just because you can doesn't mean you should. How many people either know or want to know PowerShell? Just about everyone in the room, right? Well, what about if I told you another MVP who's over in the States and who's very proud of this fact, by
the way. Wasn't
me. Wasn't him. Has anyone heard of a guy called Todd Klint? Yeah, a few nods. Todd told me this story. He was just getting into PowerShell, and he was using the get-sp database command, which retrieves or modifies, if you use it incorrectly, all the databases in your SharePoint farm. Well, what he managed to do with a very simple one-line command, right, and it's less than 30 characters, is rename every single one of his databases to the same name. Fortunately, he had a good disaster recovery plan, as all good IT pros do, and he was able to recover it. I guess you could say, you know, just because you can doesn't mean you should, right? Make sure you know what you're doing with commands. Make sure you know what you're doing with your entire farm, in your entire server, your storage, your database, right? If you're executing things on them, especially customizations, and you don't know what they're doing, you're in for a disaster.
Yeah, and we've all probably got these stories. I mean, this one is a very common one that you hear. And it's not so much now because Microsoft have educated the market. But the reality is that a lot of the times when someone goes, oh, we want to build this as a business request. We want to build this app on top of SharePoint. The devs go, no problems, let's build it. And you're like, hang on a minute, SharePoint's a platform. Why on earth is the first thing to do is to start coding? It's because a lot of developers like to code. I don't need a SharePoint designer. I'm going to write code to do all that stuff. I don't care if it takes me an extra 4 hours to do something I can drag and drop inside SharePoint Designer. So the complexity thing can get very, very hard. But the flip side of that as well is that the scenario I have where the developers and the IT pros got unstuck was that what happened was we came into an environment where they wanted to upgrade to 2010. And this environment, when I went into Central Admin, had 120 solution packages in it. And I was like, right, okay, well, usually the first thing you've got to do is you've got to get all those solution packages, get the content databases, dump it in the dev environment, and then see what will deploy and what fails based on that upgrade, right? So I went through, and I've got a PowerShell script, which I'll show you later on, that you can run on any machine, and it has been tested, and it does work, that will iterate through every single solution package and save it to a location, which I can then take all those WSPs, take to any environment, take my content databases, and basically get my exact environment up and running. So out of the 120 solution packages, about 80 didn't upgrade. So the next thing I had to do from the evaluation perspective was actually look through the code for all those solution packages. So I went to my IT pro and my developer, who were in the meeting at the same time, and I went, so where's the source code for these solution packages? And they both looked at each other. This project had been through about 60 consultants in 2 years. Most have left. Most had been writing their code on laptops and not using source controls, because what was happening was they were deploying to prod and realizing it was an error, quickly writing a code change, recreating the solution packaging, handing it to the IT pro on a USB, and the IT pro was pushing it into prod because it was a major error. So there's things like that where that's not the developer's fault, and it's not the IT pro's fault. It's both their problem. And it's all about how you communicate what rules and processes are in place for those right reasons. In that instance, there was a lot of source code that didn't exist. So we had to break open the WSPs, rebuild those in Visual Studio, and in some cases use Reflector to explode the DLLs and rewrite a lot of C# code to get it back to source code perspective. So there's a lot of things where processes are in place for a reason. And as a developer, it may feel like you've got your hands tied behind your back, but the reality is in years to come, it saves you. And this project took 13 months in the end to upgrade from 2007 to 2010 due to a lot of those configuration issues between the IT pros and the devs. So that's another little horror story. And then one last one from Mark.
I don't know if that's
real. I want to know if this is real or not.
Yeah, I don't know if it's real or not. I'd like to tell you about a little company based out of Redmond that might be sponsoring this event in some way. And that's, let's say, this is just an interesting situation that comes up. How many people here are using SQL without, like, a DBA being involved? Anyone? Come on, there must be more than a few. Yeah, all right. Is anyone of you using DPM as well? Yep, one person. All right, great. And you're using SharePoint 2010? How would you like to know that your databases probably aren't being backed up? You wouldn't really want to know about it. No, it's a funny little bug, and it happens because teams aren't communicating. The bug is this, basically. If you're using SharePoint 2010 and you've done a next finish install, right, you're going to get these
no one
big...
does that, Mark.
Nobody does that. You're right, Jeremy. you're going to get these big GUIDs, right? Has anyone seen those big GUIDs at the end of your database names? Right? Now, let's combine that with an out-of-the-box install of SQL. Does anyone know where your databases are going to go? Out of the box, if you click next, next, next through it. C, program files, MS SQL server, the instance name, then slash data. Right, that's a pretty long path, isn't it? It's like 30 characters on its own. Add to that the fact that DPM has a hard limit on 128 characters, right, in any database file name, including the path. And all of a sudden, you've got C, program files, MS SQL server, instance name, slash data, slash user underscore profile underscore service, slash massive, massive, massive long GUID, you know, all the way.
So you're going to pull off the stage, mate.
Yeah, over here. And you've got like 160 characters. DPM is actually going to report that it's backed up that database successfully. When you go and restore it, it's going to actually come back and say, won't work. How's that? So teams not talking together can have a massive impact. And it's the same with developing and IT Pro. If I'm not talking to Jeremy and Jeremy's not talking to me, we're going to screw something up.
I'd just like to point out that AvPoint's backup software does support longer characters.
Sold out, man.
So subtle. So we'll jump straight into application lifecycle management. Just give the old boy a rest. You can sit in the chair if you like. You know, take it easy. Essentially, application lifecycle management has always existed as a development process. I will introduce it here, because what I find as a SharePoint developer is that when I work with other SharePoint developers, there's different walks of life about how you became a SharePoint developer. Some people come from a business analysis perspective where they've got so far configuring SharePoint in the web UI, they've got so far using SharePoint Designer building out an application, and then they've realized, damn it, we've nearly got this thing done. We're at 80%, and it's just one little bit I've got to do, and I found this blog post where I can cut and paste this code, but I need to use Visual Studio. Now, as a developer, I actually treat anywhere you write code as a development process, whether I'm a web UI developer, whether I'm a SharePoint Designer developer, or whether I'm a Visual Studio developer. A lot of people, and to be honest, I used to when I first started out presenting, is to treat the Visual Studios just as developers. All these guys are developers. It's different levels of complexity. It's different levels of skill set. With application lifecycle management, regardless of what type of developer you are, you have to be aware of what we're going to present now. So essentially, with what we were saying before around this 120 solutions, the first thing we need to be aware of is in any environment, and you can go away and do this after the fact, is you need to be aware of something, what I call the solution package matrix or complexity matrix. What we actually did for that environment, if I can just jump through here. Is we actually came up with a way, if I can just zoom in, of having a matrix of every single customization that was in SharePoint. What I actually had to do for this evaluation is essentially have a description for every single solution package, and this is the one that I use for nothingbutsharepoint.com. I explain a description of what it is. I explain who was involved in those solutions so that if I have a question, I know who I can go and ask. I actually have an ability of saying who is the custodian of these things, where it is in source control, very, very important, 120 solutions. You think I could find the name of a particular web part because every developer names things completely differently. And over time, the actual name that goes live may be completely different to the original name of the source control folder. That's very, very useful. What type of project it was, because this was 2007. They were using a lot of Visual Studio 2008 and not Visual Studio 2010. And then various other aspects, whether they were using old things like SCSS Dev or WSP Builder or they were using the horrible out-of-the-box VSE WSS, which the team have built awesomely in 2010, might add. And then what we did was, for every single solution package, we actually identified what types of artifacts was in that solution package, whether it had content types being deployed, timer jobs, web parts, master pages. And at the end of the day, what that allowed me to do, and you can see there's a lot of different things we added here, was we got the ability to say what type of complexity that solution was, whether the update worked when we first deployed it, and if it's been deployed into that new environment. That gave us, when you've got a list of 120 of those, when I went to my managers there that I was working for, a very clear-cut way of seeing all the complexities in our environment. So I'd highly recommend that if you guys aren't doing this, build one. Now, this spreadsheet's available on nothingbutsharepoint.com. it is in the references here. If I just bring this. this one over. This mouse is horrible. Mark, what laptop's this?
Have you used Windows 8 before?
I've been using Windows 8 since the leaders, mate. What about you? So this one here, introducing the solution package matrix. There's a spreadsheet at the bottom. You can go down that exact copy I've just demonstrated and go through your environment and fill those things out. Trust me, it will help you later on. Anyway, if we go back in, essentially with application lifecycle management, this is not a new thing. .NET developers have been doing this for a long time, and they'll scoff at SharePoint developers because, well, you guys just don't do things properly. We do real dev. You guys build on top of the platform. The reality is, even though we as SharePoint developers build on top of a platform, you still need to abide by ALM. And there's three core components of ALM. There's the governance component. Yeah, I know we all love the governance word, right? But it is true. There's a governance component. There's a deployment, development component. And then there's an operational component. Now, before I dive in to explain each of them, one of the key things here you'll notice is that the operations aspect does start quite a long time into the end of the first development phase. What I would recommend, and this is a good way of getting the IT pros to work better with developers, is get them involved a lot earlier on. There'll be assumptions you make as a SharePoint dev that the environment you're deploying to has BCS installed, has search installed, is using user profiles. I've been in environments where your dev machine, right, is next, use all the service applications, and you've built this really cool app, and you demo it on your laptop, and the business love it, and then you go to deploy it into the test environment, which is a replica of prod, and you realize that half those things that you've got in your dev environment aren't there. If you get your IT pros involved early, you will catch those things. They can also take your releases that are early releases and test that that's deploying okay and catch things early rather than 5 minutes before you've promised it will be live to the business in a production environment. So get that on earlier on. From a governance perspective, the reality is that it is all the soft, fluffy stuff to do with project management and business analysis and kind of getting that business case across the line of SharePoint is the right fit for this requirement that we've got within the business and pushing that through. But it doesn't just stop there. It isn't a ticking box, Mr. BA is done, the developer's going to build it, the developer finishes it and throws it over the roof to the IT pro, and then the developer runs for his life. For the life cycle of that application, everyone should be involved, and governance should exist throughout. So across the application portfolio management, if you think about that matrix I just showed you, if we start adding content types or we start leveraging BCS, go back and update that matrix and update the complexity rating of your application. Now, one thing I haven't defined is what I mean by an application. It isn't scoped by just, well, a solution package is an application. I would say that an application is a business solution you are building for your organization, whether it be a weather web part or whether it be a whole expense request system within SharePoint. Those two things are applications that I would like to see as a line item within your matrix. In some cases, yes, there will be multiple solution packages due to the complexity of your application, and therefore you might want to indent those things on your complexity matrix. But that's what I define as an application. Now, Microsoft have thrown a bit of a spanner into that thing that I've been talking about for the last 5 years by doing what? What? Well, in 2013, everything is an app. So who in here has actually used SharePoint 2013 yet? Okay, a few. So in 2013, if you did site actions, view all site content like you do in 2010, it's now called site contents, and it's a little gear, and it's not site actions, it'll jump you to the view all site content page, which is now called site content. It'll list you all the document libraries, lists in there, but it also lists these new things called apps. But there is a little plus sign there which says click. And if you click on that, it goes to a screen that says add apps. In Microsoft's head, a document library, a task library, discussion board is an app. So all those things you've been teaching your guys for a long time about lists and libraries, Microsoft throughout the entire interface now are calling those things apps. To me, those things are building blocks. They are artifacts that you use. So I'm not that happy with that direction they've gone in, but I will keep to my definition of an application is something the business has asked you guys to build, which will be a combination of lists and libraries, content types, web parts, master pages, all those things that you create in a solution package and deploy. From a development process, if you build a good app, it's going to mature over time. So you build it, you release it, you give it to the IT pros, and they push it through. But the key here is that everybody knows that business users have changed their bloody minds. So at some point in time, you're going to have to go in here and do either some maintenance where you fix bugs, but developers don't write bugs, so we won't have those phases. But we may have a V2 here where the business has gone, actually, we want to add these things into our application now. So these things happen over time, which means it's very, very important to have source control in place, because if you're not there anymore, or maybe you're working on another project, another developer has to pick this up, they need to be able to pull down that latest release in there and pull down that application and replicate that application working in their development environment. That's also a very tricky thing to do. A lot of time, it's not just a case of grabbing the content database, downloading the source code, and deploying the solution package. There's often some manual tweaks you have to do because no one's been bothered to write the PowerShell script to do what you have to do manually in the thing because it's put in the too hard bucket or we've run out of time. So often there'll be release notes of how a developer gets started. What I would recommend, and actually in that matrix, there is a column that has release notes. How do I get this running up on a brand new fresh dev machine? Every single application you build should have that. That should be mandatory. Don't assume that the person next to you, if I give you the source control, source code, is going to be able to get your app running straight away. You should be able to provide a document to someone with the source code and get the app up and running. And then lastly, as we've mentioned, the IT pros, from this perspective of monitoring the application and deploying it, should be involved as early as possible. But these guys are going to be the ones monitoring these applications as they're being run within their production environments. And so you will have to talk as a developer to IT pros so that they understand how to monitor that application. And there's various tools that we can use to do that kind of thing. But the important part is these guys, the IT pros, will be doing those deployments. Developers should not be deploying to test and production environments, as Mark stated earlier on. So, sorry, just to add, Dave Chappelle actually wrote a white paper on this. These screens are actually taken from there. In the references section at the end, I actually list that white paper. It's a very good white paper that goes into a lot more depth around that. It's not for SharePoint, it's just ALM in general, but it's a useful guide for people if they want to get their head around it. So this was animated out, but the scrubbing guys downstairs unscrubbed that. So Mark, if you can just stand up and block the bottom five and then just...
Sam, we got a stool?
So, put your hand up if you're developing Visual Studio projects. Keep your hands up. Put your hand up if you're packaging and deploying via WSPs and not doing X copies or bat files or overriding manually. And be honest, come on guys, there's a few hands going down. Okay, put your hands up if you're using source control. Please, everyone keep their hands up. Okay, good. Okay, using a build server to generate a solution package. Yeah, that's about right, 75% go down. Anyone using dispose check, you can put your hand up and regain conscious here. Okay, good. And unit testing, everyone's down. Phew. 3 years ago here, I did a presentation on that. It is available where I run through SharePoint unit testing. It isn't a common thing to do. I haven't got time to go through that now, but if you are interested, I have got a screencast that explains why and what the approaches are for that, and it's still relevant 3 years later. So, awesome, I've got to put up with that now. So, the third thing that you're not...
I think that's the everything's okay line.
Hold on. the third thing that developers... Really? Really? The third thing that developers will notice is that if you're using Visual Studio, you get solution packages to do your deployment. Evacuate the building. You can hear it coming. With a declarative approach, when you're doing right-click, add new content type, or right-click web part, they'll generate you the XML, which is great. You deploy that into your environment, no problem. In your dev environment, you can blow away the site, recreate the site, redeploy the solution package, and it generates that content type. So if you've made tweaks to the XML, it does that. If I deploy, and I don't deploy, if I give my solution package to Mark to redeploy into a production environment, I come back into my dev, change the XML, and I hand over a new solution package to Mark, what you'll actually notice is that if certain things are in use in SharePoint, it won't automatically make those changes because SharePoint uses the declarative instructions within the solution package at creation time. If you change that declaration after the fact, it doesn't change the instances of those artifacts that have been created from it. So what you end up doing is using an imperative code approach, either C# or VB.NET. Trust me, you are not going to burn to death. To actually imperatively go, right, well, I'm going to deploy a solution package, and I know this feature was version 1, it's now version 2, here are the steps in code to go from version 1 to version 2, i.e., I'm going to add a column to a content type, or maybe I'm going to tweak a setting on my list or library. Again, I do that in a lot of detail in another session, which took about an hour to go through, of the feature upgrade process within SharePoint 2010. But my point of this slide is if you go the declarative route, which is all XML, at some stage, you're going to have to do the imperative route to make changes to existing instances of artifacts in production. So my argument is, although it's very easy to use the XML first off, learn the imperative approach to creating things in the first instance. Because otherwise what you have is a mixture of declarative code for first-time use and then imperative code for updates over time. And again, I do a whole session on that, but just bear that in mind. Is anyone taking the imperative approach at the moment? Yeah, a few. Okay. Nearly ready to hand it over. SharePoint designer. Who's a SharePoint designer developer? Who's used the new version in 2013? What big thing missing is really pissing you off? The design view, it's gone. No more. With SharePoint Designer, there is no concept of a solution package. I can't do a build and deploy and get a solution package. So anything I do in my dev environment inside SharePoint Designer, I have to have SharePoint Designer in production and copy and paste between the two. Or where I can, use File Explorer to drag and drop between my dev and my prod. That's great, but only if I'm doing it because I know where everything is. Now I have to write this Muppet a bunch of instructions to explain exactly where he's got to copy and paste code from. I'll buy you a bit later. So I just want to quickly briefly show you this one. This just to highlight this concept of a declarative instance of this and creating it, and what happens when you upgrade. So if I deploy a solution package here and activate the feature into site A, it's going to generate me a list. If I then redeploy a version 2 of that solution package with a new version of my feature and activate that in B, it creates my list, but my feature now also adds a view to that list as well. If I then make another change to my feature, I love competing against air conditioning, and deploy that and activate this into site C on a separate site collection, I get a version 3. And when I activate that, I get my list, I get my view, but now I also get a document set that's added to my list. Now this is the important bit. What's happened to the other two sites that had that feature? Nothing. So I have to work out a way of upgrading these two sites based on the fact that these are on previous versions of the feature. Now in 2010, SharePoint gives me a way to do that. And again, I do this in a whole session where essentially you go, upgrade me, ding, and it goes from 1 to 3 and it adds those things. So upgrade me, ding, and I get the extra document set in there as well. That is not automatic. It doesn't go, oh, I can compare myself to site C because that's the version 3 and tweak it. You have to programmatically tell the differences between those versions. This is where deployment between me and the IT pro gets tricky. This is 3 sites. Well, I was talking to a customer this morning with 50,000 site collections. This gets tricky. So this is the last bit I want to leave you with before I hand over to Mark. This is what happens. Developers go into, and excuse the background didn't work for whatever reason, I didn't get time, but test and prod environments, developers doing this is an absolute no-go. You should not have devs going anywhere near test or prod environments. Absolutely not. That is one thing that's responsible to the IT pro to make sure it does not happen under any costs. This is what should happen. The devs should be checking into TFS or any type of source control. TFS should be spinning up a build server, which you can kind of read there. And it should be providing a drop location to dump those WSPs in. As part of that build process, we can do all sorts of stuff. We can do code analysis. We can stamp the WSPs with particular versions. We can make sure that these things in here have the release builds of the DLLs and not the debug builds of the DLLs, which is a very common mistake that happens in development. And then, this is where it's very important, is that administrator puts a big brick wall up so those developers can't get anywhere near the test and their prod environments. And he's the only one that can reach through to that Dropbox folder and grab those WSPs and read the release notes to deploy those into test and production. That is what all of you guys should be doing. And this is a responsibility of both sides of the fence. So, in terms of a maturity, this is one thing I like to do, is to give you guys an idea of how you can measure yourself as a development team right now. At the very lowest maturity, we really say that you're not, if you're not using source control, you're in a bad way. If you are using source control, you know, you're getting there. Thanks, Mark. It's right, they're cheap.
Sorry about that. Can you just sign this
waiver the guy in the front. Medic! If you're using automated builds and producing solution packages, that's more advantageous. These next two are a little bit more advanced, and honestly, I don't see this a lot in many organizations, where we're actually taking those solution packages and automatically pushing those to a test environment or even to a shared dev environment for QA, and especially not to a prod environment. And lastly, we don't see too much automated testing going on in SharePoint, which is a big problem, and this is why the development community kind of poo-poo SharePoint, because those last two bits are actually really tricky. And if you try and convince .NET guys to come to the dark side and work with SharePoint, they're used to those things and they don't get them. So with that, I'm actually going to hand over to Mark now, who's going to talk a little bit about configuration management. Actually, I'm going to spear the aircon unit with that.
Sorry?
I'm going to spear the aircon unit with that pole.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to talk a bit about configuration management, which I guess is the flip of the coin to ALM, which Jeremy just covered off. Now, the first thing I'd like to talk about is planning and execution. Sorry, there's a bit of a weird echo happening there. So, first thing, let's just show our hands, please, and I'll get you to do this a few times, so please be patient. Everyone who's running SharePoint 2010, please put your hand in the air. Okay, keep your hand up, please. Nice and high so everyone can see it. Yep. Now,
smell.
I'd like you to keep your hand up if you don't have a test environment. If you don't have a test environment.
Holy.
Wow, really? I'm actually impressed. That's actually really good. What about put it back up if you don't have a dev environment? So there are only a few people in this room who actually don't have a dev and test environment. That is astounding. Did you expect that?
No, I didn't.
I figured that by now half the crowd would be walking out in disgust. But you guys obviously get it. You get the dev and test are really important because let's say as an IT pro, if I get a solution from a developer and I deploy it, it needs to go into dev first from them. Then with the results of that, we need to put it into test, right? Get end users testing it. Let's see what comes out of it. If we can do some automated testing, right? Do some benchmarking, find out what's actually happening. And finally get that into the production environment after we've done some thorough testing. But that's all well and good, but from an IT pro pure perspective here, no development involved, right? What happens when you patch? Right? Is everyone here testing, you know, the patches against the dev environment before they're putting them in prod? I'm getting a lot of nods, but I know a lot of people out there who don't do any testing whatsoever. In fact, they dump the binaries on the server, right? Click the upgrade button. And then half of them don't even realize you have to upgrade the database, right? So you've got the database running in an unupgraded state while the front ends are actually upgraded. The rest that hit the upgrade button don't actually follow through and make sure it's upgraded successfully, right? So they've never actually tested on a dev and test platform, but everyone in here is doing it, which is magnificent. What about change control? Is everyone using change control? Yeah? Let's see it. All right, let's try that at the flip of the coin. Who's not using change control? Anyone game enough to admit it? One person. Right, so it's like half the audience raised their hand for change control.
Like anonymous. And,
sorry? Yeah, has anyone got a drinking problem?
I will have later.
So change control is especially important because it helps us to find out what releases are being deployed to a specific server, you know, what version of particular patch I've got going, you know, when I should be patching. Scroll down.
Change it now. Sorry.
Which slide are we on? Okay, that's good. I was going to talk about governance as well. Does everyone actually have governance? Right. Yep. Does everyone? Okay. Let's rephrase it. Does everyone say they have governance? That's more like it. Governance is one of those things that people just take the best stab at it they can. It is very important. You know, it's really another form of change control, if you ask me. At least from my perspective, it is. But if you don't have a governance policy in your environment, you're going to end up in the same states where you have dev, test, and prod out of whack. Right? If you're allowing people to make changes in prod, those changes probably aren't being replicated back to your dev and test environments, which is especially important. Right? Because what good are dev and test environments if you're not replicating your production environment back to them? Out of curiosity, I would love to know the answer to this. How, if anyone's willing to volunteer the answer to this, how are you replicating from prod back to dev and test? Does anyone want to volunteer? Yes? You take a snapshot? So like a virtual machine snapshot or...? Okay, and what do you use to do that?
So
Okay. Yeah. I only heard like one word in every air conditioner. does anyone else who's a little bit closer want to? Yes, please. So you completely rebuild So you've taken the time. No, I'm going to repeat it. It's all right. So what they've done is they've used vCloud, right? And they spin up dev and test environments. When they finish doing the dev and test, you spin them back down and recreate new environments. And you've scripted that entire process? That's really impressive. Can I get a... Yeah. That's pretty cool. That kind of thing is where we should be heading, you know, with our change control, with our planning and our execution. There was one other thing I wanted to talk about quickly, and that's SharePoint users. Has anyone had a problem with the synchronization service? Yeah. Right. It's all fixed now, right? 90% of people say yes. There's always a couple that are left over. Look. Do you want to put him on? That's okay. The synchronization service caused a whole heap of problems, and one of the biggest problems I personally found was that we'd get this thing working, right? Then we'd deploy a patch or something, and all of a sudden it was broken. And what would happen is those customizations we made, the changes to the user profile service, would be lost. We'd have to reprovision the user profile service to get it working again. Now, if we've invested a really large amount of time into that particular service, you know, customizing the properties that are going to be imported, all of that information's lost, right? What happens if the user profile service was your trusted authority for all that information, right? Are you going to pull it back from AD to get it back? Or have you written it to another store? Or what if you only kept it in the user profile service, right? If we had to recreate, it's suddenly lost. Now, I don't know any companies out there, apart from ones I've been involved in personally, that actually record all of that data, right? That's just one more, you know, form of change control. These little things matter, right? Because this has a tremendous impact on the business, and all of a sudden it can be easily lost if you haven't got proper planning and documentation to say exactly how it was built. It's just an example there. Okay. How many people here have actually, you guys should all recognize this, right? This is Performance Monitor. How many people have actually gone in, right, and had a look and seen what the performance of their SharePoint farm is like on a day-to-day basis? Yeah, a few people have? Right, have you then deployed, have you recorded those settings anywhere? Yeah, a few people have, but can I get hands up if you haven't ever done that? Yeah, this is really important because let's say, I'm Batman. I'm the IT pro who's got this awesome server. The server's running fantastically well. I've got Jeremy in. Jeremy's come and compiled up something. I don't really know what he does, actually. And he's given me this solution because I'm not going to give him access to the farm, obviously. And I've installed, you know, this solution straight away. Right? Users are complaining. Things are slow. Things aren't working. I'm getting timeouts. Search isn't returning results. Now, what's my natural inclination going to be? Yeah, it's going to be to go... You.
Probably is me.
Well, it was, yeah. But that aside, what is the developer's reaction going to be? Yeah, I like that one better. Can everyone please turn around, the gentleman at the back? Yeah, he's... Thank you.
That won't be on the recording.
Let the record show it was an insulting sign. Right, the developer's obviously going to say, look, this isn't my fault, fix your servers. Right, by establishing a baseline before I actually deploy this thing, like well in advance, I can say, look, here it is pre-solution. Here it is post-solution. There's obviously a big problem here, so I've retracted the solution until you can fix it up. Did you try it on a test environment?
Quite done.
It worked on your laptop, didn't it?
It worked on my laptop.
Yeah. Knowing your platforms is absolutely crucial. And that doesn't just go for your SharePoint platform. That goes for your SQL database. That goes for Active Directory. That goes for Windows Server. Anything that is involved here. And, you know, SharePoint is an incredibly complex platform. You know, IS, Windows, SQL. I'm sure there's some other things in there. Active Directory.
You think the IT pro would know
Forefront Identity Manager. Excuse me.
Let the record know.
So here we are. Again, this just illustrates how important dev, test, and prod are, and I can't emphasize that enough. Oh, no, it did animate. Good. I was worried there. Okay. All right. It did animate in the wrong way. All right, I'm pretty sure that the next slide is broken, so I'm not going to go to it straight away. But I'd like to do a little bit of an exercise with you all here, and I know it's Thursday afternoon. You all want to get to the party, I'm sure. Yes? No? Want to go crash?
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to get to the party.
I want to go to the party. But I want to crash too.
I want to go to shoot Mark at laser tag.
Developers. All right. Look, I'd like everyone in the room who's got SharePoint 2010. And I hate to do this, but let's do it. Come on, stand up, please.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm going to do it.
Come on, everyone, play along.
Please play along. This Come is important. On. It's going to show you something.
2010 only.
2010 only. Please stand up, guys.
No 2013.
There's a few
show-offs,
people who
please.
Are just being difficult now. That's all right. I'll take photos. So the first thing I want to know is, can you please sit down? Right. If your computer that you're signing into on SharePoint is off the domain, right, if it's not on the same domain as your SharePoint environment. Right, great, there shouldn't be many. So, next one. How many of you have got all the firewall ports for Active Directory between your SharePoint environment and Active Directory? So let's say port 88, is that firewalled off? Very, very uncommon. So sit down if it is firewalled off. Great. Next one. How many of your users are not on the local network? If you have users who are not on the local network or can't VPN in, sit down. Right, it should be very few people again. Great. Now, look around quickly. I want you to sit down if you're using Kerberos. Right, every single person standing is now in an unsupported SharePoint 2010 environment. That's a pretty good example, isn't it? All these guys at the back, look at them.
Right. Run where you can.
Dead serious. These are the three requirements for Kerberos. These are the only exceptions that you can't use Kerberos in, right? These are the only excuses you have to not use Kerberos. If you're not using Kerberos, you're actually in an unsupported SharePoint 2010 environment. That's a pretty big deal, right? I mean, to be unsupported by Microsoft. If something goes wrong, they can go, sorry, Premier Field Engineers aren't going to come out and help you. It's a big deal. Any PFEs in the room? No, good.
Be careful.
What's that?
It is recorded.
No, I like PFEs, it's just they won't correct me. Okay, yep. I just really wanted to prove to you that best practices really, really are important. And running Kerberos on an environment is not only a best practice, it is the supported and only way forward for everything but those situations.
Pretty sure he just said best practices and not best practices. We'll let him go on that one. So we're going to jump off now into the tools. I'm going to make sure this is nice and loud because the aircon unit. So the utility belt that Superman and Batman wear and share together, like comrades in war. The first one that we use a lot of, and I just get an idea, how many people here actually are aware of SP Dispose Check, aware of it? How many people use it? That's good that most keep their hands up. So SP Dispose Check is essential for any environment where you are writing managed code, as in anything where you're running Visual Studio and you're running C# or VB.NET code. SharePoint has been around for a long, 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 long time. In its very heydays, it used COM objects on the server. If you log on to any SharePoint server still, there are COM objects there. So although you are writing .NET C Sharp, or if you choose VB.NET code, you'll actually be using two objects a lot, SP Web and SP Site. Now, how many people in an organization have deployed code and seen memory usage climbing up and up and up as soon as you've written that code? And then seen CPU spikes go like that across their environment? The reason for that is that for every SP Web or SP Site object that's generated, it adds an extra bit of object into your RAM. Now, unlike normal .NET code, it will automatically dispose of it by a garbage collection, which is a .NET framework capability. With COM objects, it doesn't automatically dispose of them. So what happens is your memory usage goes up and up, your .NET garbage collection CPU does this, and at some point in time, your SharePoint farm is just going to crawl over dead. And what will happen is the IIS application pool will die, so the RAM goes back down, and then it will slowly creep back up again. Then it will go down, and then it will slowly creep back up again. Every time it goes down, there is actually an outage in your service. This is because when you use SP Web and SP Site in certain circumstances, you have to dispose of those objects. If anyone's writing for the iPhone or the iPad and using Objective-C, you have to do that in those languages as well. Most people aren't aware of this. It may not have affected you unless you've seen that type of pattern in your RAM and your CPU spikes. This tool runs as part of your Visual Studio build process, and you'll see here is it highlights exactly the line of code where you've inappropriately disposed or disposed or not disposed of those particular two objects. Now, Roger Lamb helped write this, who is a Microsoft expert back in Redmond, and he has this article here which explains every single case where you have to dispose of SP Site and FB Web. Getting junior SharePoint devs aware of this can be confusing. This tool can be part of your build process, so if people check in code, it can run this and throw a failed build if it fails at that point. If you're not using this now, those people that didn't put their hand up, you should be making this at least mandatory on every single dev machine. At the very least, be looking at putting it on your build server to catch it if the devs don't install it. That is number one. That will cause you all sorts of pain. It's the reason that they try to do sandbox solutions to isolate your code so it didn't affect the farm. This will affect your entire SharePoint farm. It won't just affect the place where your web part's running where it's got cracked code. It affects the entire farm. So that's the first one. The second one is the developer dashboard. The dev dashboard can be switched on with a PowerShell command. I think I stole this screenshot from Bing somewhere. But essentially what it does is on the left-hand side, it identifies every component of that page that's been loaded, and it shows the page in millisecond times it took to do that action. On the right-hand side, it shows you how many SP requests happened, it says who did it, and it also shows a few other bits and pieces in terms of working sets, and a correlation ID so that you can have a tool I'll talk about in a moment open, hooked to that correlation ID and look for all the stuff in your logs. It'll also show you every single database query that's performed. This is extremely useful and should be enabled on every single dev machine when you're testing web parts or anything that renders on the screen.
Can I add something there?
You can.
Yeah, just a very quick story. And the customer involved is actually in the audience. And what happened was, this is very, very early in SharePoint 2010 adoption, really, really early, like 2 weeks after release. We implemented SharePoint 2010 for them, and straight away on the portal site they had, sorry, the live internet site, it was taking 30 seconds exactly to load every time. I spent about 6 hours straight looking into this thing, right? And then I happened to mention to one of my colleagues who's another MVP, and she said, why don't you try turning on developer dashboard? You know, it's a bit new, we haven't really done much with it, but it might help. Turned on developer dashboard. I think it was about 30 seconds later the problem was solved, when it helped me find straight away that a web part was failing with exactly 30 seconds, which was a timeout, and it happened to be the search web part. All that was wrong was the scope was set incorrectly. And by changing that scope to a correct scope, the timeout didn't occur, and yet the site was loading quite quickly. So this is probably the most powerful tool in debugging SharePoint right now that there is. So if you don't have it, you need to have it on there.
Yeah, and one thing to bear in mind here, we are talking about managed server-side code on this environment. if you're writing client-side JavaScript code or Silverlight code on the front end, developer dashboard will not pick that up. So just please bear that in mind, that that is one caveat if you're jumping over to client-side, which really, in realistic terms, is where SharePoint 2013 is pushing everybody in this audience. The next thing is really a power tool from an add-on perspective, which is called CKS Dev. How many people in the audience actually use CKS Dev already? So I'm going to give a shout-out to all those MVPs that have helped write this. Waldeck and there's heaps to you can go through, but Waldeck's the one that comes to mind that helped kind of start all this stuff off. Essentially, it's a bunch of add-ons for Visual Studio that allows you to do things like, if I've got a branding package, I can right-click, go add branding package, and it adds the feature, it adds all the base elements for me, rather than me having to create the master page, the page layout, the folder for my style sheets, the folder for my JavaScript, it builds all that plumbing. It's a little bit what like NuGet does for Visual Studio in other ways, but there's other things it does. If I open up the Server Explorer and I have a content type in my dev environment, I can right-click on that and reverse engineer that, and it will add it as a content type in my Visual Studio project. There's about 50 things this thing does which will save you as a developer from a productivity perspective. So I highly recommend that project. It is open source. You can see all the code these guys are writing, and they do have QAs in there. One of them is myself that tests this stuff before we release the most recent releases of this. We are currently working, or I say we, I just QA it, but the guys are actually working on the 2013 and Visual 2012 release of this. And lastly, the IE10 Dev Toolbar. Now, there is the IE9 Dev Toolbar, but the IE10 Dev Toolbar is going to do a few things for you. Some of the things it's actually going to do for you is going to show you all the timings it's taking to load these things up on your page from a client-side perspective that the developer dashboard won't show. What it will also allow you to do is do things like debug into your JavaScript code that you're writing client-side. So we'd highly recommend using that, not just from a developer perspective, but also from an IT pro perspective as well. So now, to hand over to Batman. He really is Batman.
How many people have seen this?
Please, everyone, put your hands up. No, I'm interested.
If you don't have this, you need to have it. This is the quickest, easiest way to troubleshoot SharePoint problems you've ever seen. It is a real-time replay of what's happening on a particular server in the ULS logs. That's your trace logs for SharePoint, right? This gives you the ability to filter, track down based on correlation IDs, do searches. It's just like one of the sysinternals tools, except it's just for SharePoint logs. So if you don't have it, highly recommend going and getting it. archive.msdn.microsoft.com/ULSviewer or tinyurl.com/ULSviewer also works.
You have one thing you have to be careful of if you Google it with Bing. If you type in ULSviewer, there is a Coplex project one. Don't use that. Yeah. Use the archive.msdn one. That's the good one. The ULSviewer one didn't get the attention that it got when it first kicked off. This is the official one by Microsoft. And this is where you can filter by your correlation IDs as well. So if it's real-time pinging and you want to see all the things with one correlation ID, it will just show you that. It's really quick for filtering.
Okay, what we have here is a health analyzer rule written by a very, very smart SharePoint guy out of Sweden. Is it Sweden?
Sweden.
His name is Victor Weiland, and this is a custom health rule, right, that sits inside the health analyzer rules, and it checks to make sure that any assemblies that have been deployed to the SharePoint server have not been been compiled in debug mode. Right? Jeremy can probably tell you why that's important. I can't, but...
Well, it essentially adds a lot of weight to the execution process of your DLLs, and really you shouldn't be deploying solution packages with debugged build DLLs in them. It is a habit that people pick up because it's easy just to generate the WSP. If you're using a build server, when you kick off a build to produce a solution package, you can make sure that you've flicked that it creates the released DLLs within the solution package to get around this. This health analyzer rule catches for those people that don't do that.
Now this isn't so much a tool as it is a product more than anything. Is anyone actually using SCOM, System Center Operations Manager, to monitor their SharePoint environments? Yeah? Great.
A few people.
Yeah, this is actually incredibly powerful, but only if it's been set up properly, right? That is one of the big caveats. What it'll allow you to do is monitor your config database, your web front ends, your app servers, keep an eye on all the services, make sure things are responding well. And you can even use it to do testing and benchmarking of your servers so that you'll know as soon as a threshold goes up. Let's say we've deployed a solution and that solution is causing much, much more CPU utilization. Straight away, operations manager is going to recognize that a threshold's been breached and start alerting. Right? And if we can tie that into something like Service Desk, where we're recording all this information and change control, then we're gold, because we know straight away that a WSP was deployed 5 minutes before this activity started really ramping up. And I don't want to play the blame game, but we can work together to try and fix the problem.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't work with him, but I can work with another developer. Has everyone seen this? Fiddler. This is another one that you really need to have in your utility belt. What it is, essentially, is a little proxy that runs, right, on your local machine, and it captures all the HTTP traffic that's going back and forth across your laptop or your computer. And using this, you can trace and find out exactly when things are going wrong. A good example is, has anyone had someone customizing their page and not use relative paths? So an image is located not within the same URL. Well, this would show you exactly what the image is and where it's trying to get it from. That would be a great example.
And just one more as a little bit of a plug. We actually have a tool called Deployment Manager within our suite. And if you want to know more about it, please come to our booth. What we actually do is, for those people that don't use solution packages because they're using the web UI or they're using SharePoint Designer, we can actually select one site collection on one side and push artifacts and content to the right-hand side. What we added in Service Pack 1 in this product is the ability to compare. So we can click the dev site collection, the test site collection, or the test and the prod, and actually show the differences, not just in the content and the artifacts, but also in the site settings and the list settings as well. So if you haven't got a problem, it's very easy to kind of highlight those things. Enough of a plug. So, call to action for you guys. First things first. In reality, you need to collaborate. You need to work together. It isn't dev versus IT pro. It should be a team that you work together to make things happen. You need to define the roles and responsibilities. If you have got Wintel guys and SQL guys involved, make sure you're aware at what stages those people need to get involved as those problems occur, and work as a team. You also need to have an understanding right now about where you are from a configuration management and an ALM maturity model. And lastly, try and set some short-term and long-term goals. So for the minute, if you're using source control but you're not using a build server, try and move to trying to target maybe in 6 months to have a build server up and running. There's screencards I've done in the past where if you install TFS, you can have it automatically generating your solution packages within 5 minutes of configuration. So there's no excuse not to have a build server. So we have got a few more sessions. I did a session earlier on today that was as busy as this, which we are redoing tomorrow at 9:45 in the morning with another colleague of mine. There are these two as well. If anyone's not going out and partying tonight, they'll actually be awake at 8:15 in the morning. There's a good case study by Fortescue Metal on Office 365. And then also this one by Shyam, who's a PFE at Microsoft on the East Coast, is actually introducing the new SharePoint 2013 app model. Now, one thing to point out there, he is from Microsoft, so he's going to give you the vision of how Microsoft thinks about it. I've actually done a screencast, which is online on my blog, which talks about it from the good and the bad. So app model versus the solution model, which is the way that you guys run at the minute with full trust solutions and sandbox solutions. So if you are interested in that, please check out my blog. We have to put a find me later. So where are you going to find me later? I'm going to be at the bar. And where you're going to find Mark is at the bar next to me.
Someone else.
Yeah, a different bar. So we are running out of time. But thank you very much for your time. If you do want to stay for the Easter egg and for questions,
we're going to rip through them really
quick. We're going to rip through them in like a minute flat.
Think of it like a top 10
kind of
thing.
So if you are patient, we will go through them right now. Okay, we'll go patient. But thank you, anyway. I appreciate that. Thank you. So this is the Easter egg, which I actually presented this 4 years ago at a user group in Perth. I used to help run that one over there. And this is just a bit of fun. So this one, the first one, is dispose correctly. This is what we talked about the SP web and the SP site. This is where you can use SP dispose check to make sure you are disposing correctly. We also want to make sure that you don't manually deploy any DLLs to your GAP. If a DLL is getting on a SharePoint server,
it means
getting
you've
on
given
SharePoint
the developer
server,
admin access. You shouldn't have
done it. Yeah, you shouldn't have done it in the first place. Yeah. You're getting it to the SharePoint servers via a solution package. Why? Because in a multi-server SharePoint farm, you'd have to then manually go and add it to every single server in the farm. If you put the DLO in a solution package, SharePoint does it for you. It also makes redeploying these things a lot better. Third, don't add debug DLLs into your test and prod environments. Please use... that's a horrible photo. I'm glad I'm looking this way. Please use release builds when you package and deploy to test and prod. Please be careful when you're using certain objects and methods inside your classes. You will be able to catch which ones you shouldn't be using. If you're using SVListItems collection, please put that into an instance of an object and don't iterate around that, because you will make, if you're going 30 times around, you will call that 30 times, rather than putting it into an instance and iterating around the instance. Common mistake people make, kill SharePoint. Don't swallow exceptions. Try catch. Do not just swallow, because if you are doing swallowing, it's bad. You need to capture those exceptions and log them somewhere so you're able to see that your application is really bad crack code and that other developers can see that you've written crack code and go back and fix it. Do not use try catches to make web parts work. You are the devils. Custom logging. I don't even know where I found this one. Do not use custom logging. ULS is there for a reason. You can have your logs for your individual applications coming up interleaved with every other logging from everything SharePoint is doing. Sometimes you may be calling the user profile service and your application throws an error. You can see it in your log, but you're not in context of all the other stuff going on that server. Maybe user profile service is down. You'll be able to see that above your log entry. Use ULS. Do not use Log4Net or any other horrible bloody logging system. Do not custom log. Otherwise, you'll turn out like him and be eating horrible bark.
That's his leg, man.
That's my dog at home in New York. Do not write inline code in user controls. Please use managed code. Do not try and do that. You're going to have horrible problems with it, with debugging and doing things in runtime. Do not X-copy into a SharePoint server. Use a solution package. If you've got a site template you want to get into a root folder in the 12 or the 14 or the 15 hive, use a solution package. X-copy is dead. The batch files we used to use in SharePoint 2007 should not be used. Please do not use X-copy. That's Mark's girlfriend. Please do not edit out-of-the-box files. Do not touch them, because every time you do a service pack, a cumulative update, a major upgrade to SharePoint, you are going to lose your job. Okay, so please, 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 I love feedback. Mark loves feedback. We love to know what you liked about the session, what you didn't like about the session, what you think we missed. We love hearing the feedback, good and bad. So I encourage that. If anything, it's because you can slap Mark and point to the mouse that you could win. Please also access this information. This recording will be on there. You will see all our little cheeky anecdotes under the microphone that you'll be able to grab at a later date and hear our wonderful accents again in the future. And also, if you haven't been to the productivity stand and had a go and made yourself look a complete idiot trying to fly a plane on the simulator, which you can win and take home, please go and do that. And I don't know what those animations are for. That's a bit silly.
Yeah, you need to be wearing the Office 365 shirt.
No one here is wearing that shirt.
No, if anyone wants an Office 365, now we're finished.
At the end of the show.
Maybe it was a Get Out thing. Look, if you want an Office 365 shirt and you can't find anyone, come and grab me. I've got like 5 or 6. Right, not after this, because I'm going to a bar. But come and grab me tomorrow. I'll give you a shirt, and yeah, you can go and win on the flight simulator.
And lastly, who likes the new Microsoft logo? It needed a change. Wow, this is a tough audience. Three hands up. Holy crap.
All right, guys. Well, look, thank you very much for coming. And look, I'm going to give you a quick takeaway. If you're an IT pro, find a developer and give them a hug. Oh. If you're a developer, keep to yourself. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.